Now we're going to start the top of Kuf Lamed Hey Amud Aleph. So there's a case here. How would the Chakasha Chayiv? There was somebody who was on his deathbed, and he has brothers, but he doesn't have children. So if he has brothers and doesn't have children, the assumption is that his wife has to perform Yibum. Amrule Itite. So they said to him, Itite Laman. Who does your wife go to? Who should she marry? Who does she miyabim to? Should she have to do yibum or not? So he said back to them, Chazi lekana rabo. She is ruya to marry a kohen gadol. So his statement that she is ruya to marry a kohen gadol is indicative that she doesn't have to perform yibum and that she's muteret l'shuk. She can marry to whoever she wants. Now the right, so it's a little difficult here because obviously she cannot marry a Kohen Gadol because she's an Almana. So by definition, she can't marry a Kohen Gadol. So there are some who wanted to erase the girsa of Rabbah and just write Chazi Lekano. On the other hand, as the Tosfos points out here and the Rashbam points out here, she's still not even Ru'uya the Kohen. Why is she not Ru'uya the Kohen? Because why do we believe the husband over here? Why do we believe the husband that she does not have to marry a brother or not have to perform Yibum? Because he has a migo. What's the migo? The migo is that he could have divorced her. So the migo is, he's believed now, Neman, to say that she's muteret l'shuk, that she's not required to perform yibum, because we can say, the worst case scenario is that he gave her a get, and she's a grusha, and therefore she doesn't have to marry. But if that's, his whole believability is premised on the fact that he could have given her a get, and then she's a grusha, she obviously cannot marry a kohen. So even if you say kohen, it's not helpful. So then, like Shaul was suggesting, it's some form of hyperbole, but really a sense that she's muteret. She can do, you know, as she pleases. It's Kohen or Kohen or Rabba. There was Rav Menachem, who tells us quotes over here, was Goreis, that it should just be Kuhuna. And what it means Kuhuna here is that she can return to her father's house. I mean, that Kuhuna means that she has no children here. She's not Zukeket the Yubum. And therefore, what happens to a woman who is married, who has no children, when she is a Bat Kohen? Bat Kohen is Chuzeret LeBeit Avia. Chuzeret LeBeit Avia to Yochelet B'Trumah. So that's what it means, Kuhuna over here. Kuhuna means that she can go back to her father's house. So whatever the exact interpretation over here, the basic premise of the case is that he wants to say that his wife does not have to perform Yibum. So Amar Rav, or maybe it's possibly Rabbo, Mai Nechushla. What do we have to worry about here? Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ava, Amar Rav Yochanan. We have a statement from Rav Yochanan that Baal Shamar Gerashti Et Ishti Ne'eman. A husband who says that I divorced my wife, he's believed. So over here too, we're going to say the exact same thing, that he's believed in saying that she's not Zukuka the Yibum. So Amar Abaye says to him, Va'a Kiyata Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amar Rav Yochanan. So here's another Amora quoting a member of Rav Yochanan. I mean, it's the same Rav Yochanan. Before we had Rabbi Chir Ba'avo, and now we have Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef quoting Rabbi Yochanan, Baal Shemar Gerashti Et Ishti Eino Ne'eman. He's not believed. So that won't help. Samalei, V'lav Mi Lo Shaninu Kan L'Mafreya Kan Abba. Depends what we're talking about. Can he change, in terms of changing the status, or being Ne'eman, it might have to do with whether we're talking retroactively or we're talking prospectively. So when it comes to prospectively, he can make a statement that she's divorced because he could divorce her right now on the spot. So then he's Ne'eman. Lemafreya, to say that she was already divorced, that he can't do because the only thing he could do is divorce her now. Doesn't mean that he could change her status in a retroactive manner. So he says that goes to reconcile between the two statements of Rabbi Yochanan. Let's say one is Lemafreya and one is Mekan Udhaba. So as Rabbi responds to who Rabbo, sounds like it's Rabbo here, Veshnuye Nikum Lismach. But he says, why do we have to settle for this compromise and say that it's really Rabbi Yochanan made one statement, or we can reconcile between the statements of Rabbi Yochanan? Why do we have to say that? Let's say that these are Shnei Amoraim, and the Amoraim argue about Rabbi Yochanan's position, and his position is true whether the Mafreya or Mikalan Abba. I mean, that the position exists, and there is no difference. Mafreya or Mikalan Abba, each one has its own position. Because we have a Ravain Ladavar. Over here, for instance, when we say that Inu Ne'eman, we have some sort of circumstantial evidence that he didn't divorce her. Why do we have circumstantial evidence that he didn't divorce her? Right, there's no kol. There's a, generally by Gerushin, we say there's a kol. And because there's a kol by Gerushin, then we assume that there is no kol here. There's circumstantial evidence that there was no divorce. And so why should we believe him? Even though normally we should believe him, or why shouldn't he be Ne'eman? Because he could divorce her. But maybe here, because the circumstantial evidence is against him, we say, no, that's not the case. Right? And the, we always have by Gerushin that there's a call. Gemara Megillah speaks about the fact that Mordechai was married to Esther, and she would go back and forth between Esther and the Chashverosh. So the Gemara over there, or Tosus over there, asks, why didn't he divorce her? Why didn't he give her a get so it wouldn't be a problem? So Tosus says over there, he didn't give her a get because the get has a call. Get has a call, and therefore they would find out about it. So they didn't want to make it known to the public. They didn't want the Chashverosh to find out about it, so they didn't give her a get. So you see the underlying premise that a person's divorced or gets a get, that there is this idea that it would be known. And the fact that it's not known over here ruins or weakens his migo, that he should be Ne'eman, the fact that he could give her a get. So this case, type of case came up, or Rav Natan Bar Ami was asking about the loch of the Maise, and Rav says, Chushla. Let us be choshesh for the position of Abaye. So what does it mean, let's be choshesh for the position of Abaye? It means that we're not going to answer that. Rabbi Yochanan, right, believes always Ne'eman, and the difference is Mafreya Lekan Alaba. We're going to say there are two Amoraim. One Amora says always Ne'eman, and one Amora says never Ne'eman. Now we have a suffix, what Rabbi Yochanan says. We have a suffix about what Rabbi Yochanan says. It's a suffix about what the status of this woman is. And then Rabbi says, Chushla, we'll be choshesh for that position. And therefore, she would not be muteret l'shuk unless we can bring evidence that she was divorced, or somehow get evidence that she is free and not zukuka liyibum over here. So how, another case, we had a chazaka that he doesn't have brothers over here. And we talk about a chazaka is that without edim. I mean, this is some sort of either kol or some sort of known fact, but not that we have actual edim to testify to this fact. The assumption is that he has no brothers. But at the time that he dies, he also says he has no brothers. So Amar Rav Yosef, Ma'ilei Chushla, right? What was there to worry about? Number one, we're muchzak already that he has no brothers. Number two, Amar Bishad Mita Deleitle. We also have, right, at the time of his death, we have him saying that he doesn't have brothers, which is the migo that we saw before, that he has a right to say he has no brothers, when we can say that he could have divorced her. So from both of those facts, it's obvious, it's like a pshita, that he's believed over here. So you say, well, I mean, what's the question even? So this is the next part of it. Amar Le Abaye, Hi, I'm ready to eat a dim b'medinat ha'yam. There's a rumor circulating. It's not that we know for certain, but there is a rumor circulating that there are edim b'medinat ha'yam, that he does have brothers. So the edim are not present here. We have no evidence to the fact that he has brothers, but there's some kol that is circulating that says that he does. There are edim that know about a brother. So now the question is, do we choshesh? So now he says back to Mahashto, miat halet nu kaman. These edim are not here. And when it comes to a case, we say, Masha Einav Shel Dayan wrote, whatever evidence is in front of us over here, that we will deal with. We're not going to deal with speculation or rumor about the edim b'medinat ha'yam. Why should we worry about that? I know the Rabbi Chanina, because we have a position, Rabbi Chanina, who tells us, Damar Rabbi Chanina in Ketubah, Zekdushin, Edim Bitzad Estan V'Teaser. We have Edim way away, far in the north, and we're going to worry about it. She's going to be Asur. So here we're talking about a Shvuya. Shvuya is a captive, and she comes back and says, Nishbeti V'Tohorani. She says, I was taken into captivity, but I am Torah. I did not have any problems when I was in captivity. I was not nival to the captors. And therefore, I can marry a Kohen. I can marry whomever I please. There's no problem of Zona over here. So we say that there's a rumor circulating that there are Edim up in Astan that say, that, or know that she was Nishbet. Now once she is, we have Edim that she's Nishbet, she loses her Nemanut. Why? Because by the case where she's Nishbetani, Vitorani, there we say a Pesha Asur, a Pesha Hitir. She says she was in captivity, she says she was Torah. And if we have Edim that say that she was nishbeit, then it's no longer a pesha asur, a pesha etir, because the evidence that she was nishbeit comes from a third party. So then she doesn't have that migo of nemanut anymore, because she can't just say it. So here we say, with the rumors, there are edim that would ruin her nemanut here. So Rabbi Chanina says, we don't worry about those edim. They're not here. We don't worry about them. So Amalei Abaye says, no. Im hikalnu b'shvuya, if we are meko by shvuya, nekel b'eshedish, when we meko by eshedish, over there we're talking about shvuya. And a shvuya has an underlying premise that isha is mishameret atzma min aznut. That generally women protect themselves from having znut, and therefore she has a chazaka being tehora, and therefore we're going to say that chazaka of her being tehora will offset the rumor about the fact that there are edim somewhere that know that she was nishbet. So we have her saying she was nishbet b'torani, pesha sur petu hitir. We have rumors that there may be edim somewhere else, but we also have a chazaka that a woman in general is mishemeret etzma. So that chazaka offsets the rumor, and then it's pesha asur pesha hitir, and she's fine, she should be Torah. Over here, we don't have that case. What do we have over here? We have a case of eshedish. Why do we have a case of eshedish? Because she's married. Now it's interesting, I'll just read you the Rishbam, but obviously there's a problem. It says, nekel b'eshedish, bitmiya, why? Deika yisur chenet, v'hi b'chezkat yisur adata. She was a married woman. She has an Isur Chenek. When we're talking about Shvuya, a Shvuya getting married to a Kohen, what's the worst Isur she can violate? It's a lav. It's a lav of Zonah, that a Kohen may not marry a Zonah. So at worst, even if she's wrong, or even if the evidence is wrong, at worst they're violating an Isur lav. But so we'll be sumech on her, because what's at risk is a lav. And number two is, she's saying, Torahani, Mishbetani Betorahani, and all you have is a rumor of a Edim, and she has a Chazkat Torah. Over here, what do you have? You have an Eshedish, a married woman, what's the punishment? What's the Isur of Eshedish? Chenek. So you're dealing with Eshedish, and the question of the rumor of Edim, and her Chazokah is a Chazkat Isur. Her Chazokah is that she's married. So the problem is, her husband's dead. Her husband died. So what are you talking about Isur Chenek? And what are you talking about Cheskas Isur? So first of all, so if her husband dies, what's the Isur by Yibum? It's also an Isur Lav. That a woman may not go to the Shuk, a woman may not go freely marry others when she is Kukal Yibum, and that is what, lo? That the woman should not be to a foreign party, meaning that to a third party. That's the Isur of marrying when she's a Yivama. That's the Isur of marrying someone else who's not one of the Yivamim. So there's also only an Isur Lav. So what are you talking about, Isur Chenek? So you have to say, the Bach picks this up in the Rishbam as well. What you have to say here is that the derivative, that of course she's not an Eshedish now, but, and there is no Chenek, but the whole derivative of her status comes from an Eshedish. Her status today is generated through an Eshedish. So the Cheskat Isur is generated because of her previous marriage. And number two, that Cheskat Isur is a real strong Cheskat Isur because it was an Cheskat Isur that came with Chenek with it. So we're not saying like right now she has an issue of Chenek. Not right now she's an Eshedish. But rather, her position is derived, right? Her Chazak is derived from a status that was Eshedish, Chenek, and Isur. So that's why her status today, why should we make it over here to say all of a sudden, let her go free and clear? Because there's a rumor here. So Amalei Rava, the Rabbi Natan bar Ami, the same statement again from Rava to Rabbi Natan bar Ami, Chushla, Bichoshesh for the position of Abaye. So in both these cases, Abaye makes a statement which says, don't rely on the solution, right? But rather, we should be Choshesh. In the first case, Abaye says, rely on the solution that Rabbi Yochanan made two statements and we're reconciling between the statements, but rather say it's two Amoraim that are arguing about the position of Rabbi Yochanan. If that's the case, we have a safek whether the woman should be, whether the Baal should be Neman or Enu Neman, and the safek whether the woman is free or not free from Yibum. And also in this case, we say there's a rumor here. We say, rumors about Edim far away. We're not chushesh for that. We don't worry about that. So over here, the woman should be free and clear to marry anyone she wants. Along comes Abai and says, wait a minute, maybe there's a difference. Over there, that's by Shvuya. By Shvuya, we're Mekil, because the Isur is a lighter Isur. The Chazaka is a stronger Chazaka, and it's a Cheskas Heter. So that Cheskas Heter, plus the lighter Lav, will free her from the rumors. But in our case over here, where we're talking about rumors, against the Cheskas Eshadish, Cheskas Yisur, that comes from a much stronger Eshadish, the rabbi says, maybe there we will not be Mekel, and we will be Choshesh for Eidim bin Medinat Dayam. For Choshesh for Eidim bin Medinat Dayam, this woman's not free and clear to marry whomever she wants. She's got to clear up the case before she can marry. So the rabbi in both these cases says, we're Choshesh for Abaye. And therefore the woman will have to bring evidence. Either there are no brothers in the first case, and also here, in this case, bring evidence that the Edim don't exist, or that there are Edim, but they don't say such a thing, in order to be able to be free and clear, and not be chayevet in Yibum.
In Rus, right, she had to get chalitza from Poni Almoni. Is Poni Almoni Bachlan and Kilion's brother?
No. Probably not.
So they're asking here about a brother. Right.
Isn't there a problem about other relatives as well? No. I mean, Minat Torah, there's only one problem, and that's brothers. It seems to be that there's a Minat Ga'am, the Ramban discusses this by Yehuda, that there was a minhag amongst the people to marry the closest relative that existed, and the Torah saw the brother as being the Miatzeg, as the best person for it, and therefore the Torah puts emphasis on the brother, as even Matir, what would otherwise be an Isur Erva with a Gabay brother. The requirement to marry other relatives is not a requirement, simply a minhag. That's not a din min haTorah. And it seems in their day that they did see some benefit to that, and they did it. But the emphasis of the Torah is the person, the Ramban has a whole thing in by Parshat Yehuda and Tamar about how the brother is the most like. Therefore, you can produce a child that is most similar to what the other brother would have produced, and more similar to the brother, because you have a blood relative who's the closest to him. The Ramban says that the Torah simply talks about brother. The minhag was to involve others, parties, not just the brother. Right, so that's how he explains Yehuda and Tamar. Okay, so there you go. So that is limited to a brother in this case. All right. So now we have the next line in the Mishnah. The first line in the Mishnah is, if you want to say B'ni is Ne'eman, but if he says Ze'achi, Eino Ne'eman. If he says, this is my brother, he's not believed. V'idach Maika Amrei. There are a number of brothers here. One brother says, we have, meet our new brother, our long lost brother. So, one brother says this. What do the other brothers say about this newfound brother? So what are the possibilities? Ike Amrei Achuno. If they agree, oh, here's a long lost brother, let's all meet him. Amayito Imo Bechelko. Right? Why does the new brother, the newfound brother, only get a portion with the brother who brings him forward? But too low. And now with the other brothers. Everyone seems to agree that they have this newfound brother. So when it comes to splitting the Yerusha, all the other brothers have to contribute to get him to his piece of the Yerusha. Ella de Kamre, so what are you going to suggest? Lav Achinuhu? The other brothers are going to say, this isn't our brother. We never heard of this guy. This guy is not our brother. So if they say that, Ema Seifa, what are you going to do about the Seifa? Nafu nuchasim imekum acher, Yerushua chavimo. So the Mishnah makes two statements. Mishnah says that one brother, let's call it, we have Ruvain comes along and says, I found our long lost brother, right? Then Shimon, Levi, Yehuda say, but this guy is not our brother. So when they say he's not our brother, that means that they're saying we have no relationship with this individual. So if we have no relationship with this individual, that has two impact in two ways. One is that they don't have to contribute towards his Yerusha. But number two is that if he gets Yerusha, if this long-lost brother finds some Yerusha, then Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda have no entitlement to that Yerusha. Why? Because they don't agree that he's their brother. Our Mishnah makes two statements. One statement is that they have no obligation to contribute towards Yerusha. On the other hand, the Mishnah says that they do get a portion of his Yerusha. So the Mishnah is inconsistent in that way. In order for them to get a portion of the Yerusha, they basically have to admit he's their brother. So Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda have to agree that this long-lost brother is really their brother to get a portion of the Yerusha. But if they do that, then they would be obligated to contribute towards his Yerusha of the long-lost brother if they collected something. So you have a stira in the Mishnah, which seems to indicate one side, which is that they do not have to contribute to his Yerusha. It sounds like they don't agree that he's a brother. On the other hand, that they do receive a portion of whatever he inherits indicates that they do believe he's their brother. So how do you reconcile that? Lo tzricha, we need it. This is the case. The ka'amre ein anu yodim. They say we don't know. When we say we don't know, what does it become? Amotzi mechavero alava raya. So motzi mechavero alava raya. So they say we don't know he's our brother. Therefore, they're not obligated to contribute towards this brother's yerusha. On the other hand, when it comes to the case where they are recipients of that which their brother does. There, they can get it. Why? Because the other brother, the long-lost brother, says, Vadai. It definitely is our brother. So they can say, well, that's the claim that it's Vadai, our brother. Then he can't walk away from the fact that he said he is their brother. If he is their brother, then he has to contribute to all of them, the Yerusha. So now, Amar Rava, from this, Zot Omeret, we can conclude, Mane Libi Adecha, V'Halo Mer Eni Odea Patur. Person says that, you owe me 100. Right? The creditor comes along and says, you owe me 100 shekel. V'Halo Mer Eni Odea. The other individual says, I don't know, Patur. He does not have to contribute, because that's what we have over here. We have a case where one brother is saying, Bari Li, it's certain to me that you are my brothers. The other brothers come along and say, Eni Odea, we don't know. So what do we say in that halacha? Do they have to contribute towards his Yerusha? No. So that means that you're patur. We have a bari and a shema. And a bari and a shema, you're going to be patur. So bayamar, bayasiz, ba'olam. No, that's not the case. You are chayav. V'shani ocha. Here it's different. Over here, the case is that there's a third party making the statement. Because who's the one coming and making the claim that this brother is really their brother? It's not the brother himself. It's not this individual, the long-lost brother coming and saying, I am your brother. It's Reuven, one of the brothers who's saying, that is our long-lost brother. So Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda say, I don't know. So now you have the Reuven claiming Bari, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda claiming Eni Yehuda. So it's not the equivalent of a case where the creditor himself comes along and says, I am your brother. Right, I mean that where the long-lost brother comes along and says, I am your brother, b'vadai. That would be the equivalent to a case of money lebi adech, and the other one says, any yodeh. Over here, you don't have the person who's making the claim being the one who is miyatzig, the one who's representing the bari side. Who's the bari? The other brother. So Bai says the cases are not necessarily comparable. Here we have a case where it's the third party making the bari statement. Reuven's making the statement about the long-lost brother. Or Shimon Levi, you just say, I don't know. In the case of Manel Abiyadech, we have the creditor himself, the claimant himself, making the taina that it's bari, that you owe me money. When you owe me money, that means that you have a bari. And then the Shema of the Lovet, the debtor saying Shema, there over there we say, he will be chayav because... In that case, the claimant makes the bari case. He says Shema, and it all goes through. Tosfos points out over here, something that he points out in Bava Kamma, where the actual case is in Bava Kamma, where the Gemara discusses this, that Tosfos says that there is a difference between the different types of bari and Shema. That the point is, that over here, the bari and Shema by a milveh might be different than a bari and Shema in other cases. For instance, a case where you have the para that gave, there was a shorshan agachata para, and the baby is lying dead at its side. The fetus is lying dead at its side. And we don't know if it miscarried before the shor was gorded, or after the shor that gorded. So over there we have a safek, and the Gemara there says, and it says that, or at least some of the opinions say that it's maimon amutoba safek, and therefore chokim. Which is sumchus. The Gemara says, well, why isn't it bari v'shema over there? So the Gemara says, it's not bari v'shema. Why is it not bari v'shema? So let's think about why is there a difference? Because in the case of the creditor and the debtor, the bari is a good bari, and the shema is a bad shema. Why is the bari a good bari? Because the malveh, the creditor, is coming on saying, I for certain lent you money. And he has to say that to the face of the loveh. He has to say that face to face with the loveh, and the loveh knows whether he lent them or not. So now you have someone who is going to lie to the debtor's face. That is Meiz Panim. We don't expect someone to lie to the face of the debtor. So that's why his certainty or statement of certainty that it's Bari is a good Bari. On the other hand, the Lovez Shema, I don't know, is a bad Shema. Why? Because he should know. He should know whether he borrowed the money or not. He should be able to say, no, I didn't, or yes, I did. The fact that he doesn't know is a bad Shema. So you have two things. You have a good Bari and a bad Shema. So that's why in the case of Bari and Shema of Mane Libi Adecha, we say Chayav. Because Bari and Shema have a very strong Bari and very weak Shema. Other case, by the case of Shor Shnagach Chadapara and Yalda, the baby sitting on its side, over there we have a question. We have a Bari and a Shema. The Nizak comes along and says it's Bari Li that the Hezek happened before. The goring happened and then the baby miscarried. On the other hand, the other individual says Shema. Now is his Bari a good Bari? Not such a great Bari. Why? Because he knows for certain that the Mazik, the owner of the shore, has no clue. He wasn't there. How is he to have a clue about what happened? So of course he can say, Bari, he can lie, and nobody will know whether he's lying or not, because isn't it being made fun of? On the other hand, the Shema of the, right, the owner of the shore, that Shema, is it a bad Shema? No. What do you expect from him? He wasn't there. How would he know? So his Shema is actually a good Shema. It should be what he's saying is Shema. So over there, that Bari and Shema, the Bari does not override the Shema. Why? Because it's a weak Bari and a strong Shema. So over there, we would say or suggest that that Bari v'Shema does not work, and it's Mamona Mutal b'Safek, and it's either a Motzi b'Chaver Lavaraya or a Mamona Mutal b'Safek is Chokim. So in that case, the Bari and Shema, the issues of Bari and Shema don't apply. Tosus suggests that. At the end of the Tosus here, he rejects it possibly and says maybe not, or maybe Abaye does not believe that. And Abaye believes in all cases, Bari dictates and not Shema, and there will be no differentiation. We have to, it's really a Baba Kama Sugi, I'm just pointing it out here, because Tosus here repeats that Shita, which is interesting, in differences between Bari and Shema. Alright, now, the Gemara continues. If he passes away, the long-lost brother passes away, then the property comes back to the brother who made the claim that he is their brother. For instance, Reuven here, you have a number of brothers. You have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda. And then you have long-lost brother. So there are really five portions that should be divided up, right? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda, plus long-lost brother. Three of the brothers claim that they don't know about this brother. They don't have any obligation to pay him. Reuven, who agrees that he's long-lost brother, has to give what his portion from his property. He'll have to give the portion that really should belong to that brother. So he'll have to take his, whatever Yerusha he got, he'll have to take a quarter of his Yerusha and hand it to that brother. So that way...
The whole portion, or will they split with his...
No, he will take only what he's responsible for. The other three brothers, he won't be obligated. There are four brothers there. The four brothers each should have to take, right, one quarter of their, one fifth, thank you. Each of the brothers should have to take one fifth of their property and hand it to this individual. That way everybody now has the same amount of property. So now when they all have the same amount of property, that'd be fine. But three of the brothers say we're not involved. So the one brother Reuven who says yes gives the one fifth that he is obligated to give. Now if the long lost brother dies, that fifth of property that he contributed doesn't get now spread across all the brothers. It goes back to Reuven who contributed it. So that's what the Mishnah says. Now Gemara has a question. By Rava, Shevach Sheshibchu Nechasim Me'aleihem, right? The value of the property, if it went up by itself, Ma'u. Yeah, right. Assuming that that long lost brother has no other Yerushim, because these are his brothers. These are his only Yerushim. Right, so now, what happens if the property, accreted or, value enhanced by itself? If we talk about the value that was increased by investment by the long lost brother, there's no question. It's as if getting property from a third party. Property from a third party gets distributed to all the brothers, all four brothers, because they said any Yodah. There are no other relatives, and they say, you, Reuven, made a statement that it's Bari Lecha, that it's our brother. So it's our brother, we'll collect from his Yerusha. So here, where this long lost brother invested in the property, that's clear that it goes to all the brothers. The only thing that Reuven, who claims is the one who admitted and gave property to him, the only thing he gets back is the core property. But any shevach, any value above that, will be distributed to all the brothers. Kiti Bailach, the question is, b'shevach she'enu magia l'ketfayim, where the property went up by itself in value. How is that? How does the value of the property enhanced without any investment? Well, that's like a case of going dik levalim. It's a palm tree that got bigger. It got it with the baby palm tree, and all of a sudden it grew by itself, and now it's giving off fruit. Arov aska sirton, or cases that it's land, and all of a sudden a flood came along and washed up all this good, you know, dirt or dung onto the property. So over there, the property now is worth more. Its value has been enhanced or gone up by itself, right? Without, it's called shevach mamela. So in that case, are the other brothers entitled to it? So here the Gemara leaves it as a teiku. We don't know. We don't know what the other brothers are entitled to in this case. It's machlokas. We've seen this a number of times. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in the Gemara about what is magila ketfayim. Is magila ketfayim something that's talush and not mechubar to the karka? That's one possibility. Is it something where you can carry it off in your shoulder? That means that you can carry it off the property at this time, or it's something that you normally bring to and off the property. It's not attached, mukhubar is not shayach to the property. The idea over here, the Rashbam claims, it's something that tarachba, that he makes an effort in it. And that's one of the explanations of Tosos there, which is that Tarach Magilik Hetfayim is something that you use your Ketef to bring and to invest in, that you worked to enhance the value. So there are numerous explanations of what Magilik Hetfayim is. Most of the common denominator between them is something that has something, Magilik Hetfayim, something that's separate from the property somehow. Somehow definable outside of the property versus something that belongs to the property. So either it's mechubar, it could be something that's attached to the property, therefore it's shayach to the property, or it's talush, and therefore it's no longer shayach to the property. On the other hand, it could be something that where you invested, where it's not the property that generated the value, but rather the investment that generated the value. You're separating between the core principal property and value or objects that are separate from that property. Again, that's, again, Machlokas Rashi and Tosfot, and other places how to explain it. Here, the Rashbam is to face what seems to be one of the Shitot in the Tosfot was there, which is the Tarachba, that he made an effort and he invested in it. So that's how he calls the a Megillah Ketfayim over here. Right. Now, the new Mishnah. Mishimate, benimse daideki kshura yericho. Person passes away and tied around his, die over here is his last will and testament. Harizu enaklum. This is a nothing. Right? When we have a shechim meira that's giving instructions, either he gives the instructions baal peh, and then he's believed, or he has them write down the instructions. But just because he has his last will and testament hanging on his thigh, that doesn't do anything for you, because then the instructions were never given to anyone. Now, shechim meira works because of the rabbanon that they're able to grant on his deathbed, so he won't worry, they'll grant his these gifts. But not that there's a formal type of kinyan over here. If it's a formal kinyan, it doesn't work. Why? Because formal kinyan is in the shtar. The shtar is only valid after he dies. Why? Because the people receiving it only get the shtar after he's dead. They get the shtar after he's dead. There's no such thing as a shtar after mita. There's no such thing as a kinyan after mita. So over here, the shtar is valueless because it doesn't do anything. It doesn't work in the process given for Shechim Meirah. Also doesn't work in the process of kinyan, regular kinyanim. So you have nothing over here. On the other hand, Zika Bala Acher, if he gave it over to someone else, right, he granted it to someone else, Ben Mina Yorshim, Ben She'en Mina Yorshim, whether it's to those that are, well, someone is supposed to be Yorishim, someone is not supposed to be, Dvarav Kayamim. In that case, what he states, wherever that he, statement that he makes, works. Because that's the whole point of a Shechim Meirah, as long as he's alive. And he doesn't write, even if he doesn't write it down, but he says, you take this property, you take this property, that works. That's the principle of Shechem Meirah, that he's allowed to give a tzava that works before he dies. Tarabanan, ezuhi daidaki. What is a daidaki? So this is where it says, kol shekatuv ba, it's written it, da tehele meikam viliyot. This will be established and happen. And it's a instructions. It's instructions that's given by a Shechem Meirah. Am I giving instructions that after my death, this will take place, or this is the way things should be distributed? So he's giving instructions on his deathbed. That's what a daidiki is. Vezi matana, what's called a gift. Kol shekatuv ba meyom la'achar mita. A gift is something that you say from now, from today, until after my death. Oh wow. When I say, meyom la'achar mita, hu dehav yamatana meyachsh. The only way you can grant a gift in life, anybody can grant a gift, is say Meyom Lachamita. What is it that you just say? Here's a gift today. That's not a good gift. So this is what it means. Ezui matanat bari shikmanat shchem mira. What is a matana that works exactly like a shchem mira's matana? To lo kani alachamita that only goes effective after the death. You can simulate a gift of a Shechem Meirah. How does a gift of a Shechem Meirah work? A gift of a Shechem Meirah works, there's no kinyan over here today. He just instructs that the land or his property should go to such and such an individual. When does that become effective? It becomes effective when he dies. Meaning that if he doesn't die, there is no kinyan. If he gets up from his deathbed, there is no kinyan, and he takes back all the property. Because his whole instruction was that it's effective from the time he dies. How can I simulate that with a matanat bari? A bari can't do this because a bari is not a shechem meirah. He doesn't have the right to grant gifts in that way. So as you simulate what a shechem meirah does, he gives a kinyan that says meyom ul achamita. Why is meyom ul achamita? What does meyom ul achamita mean? Meyom means from today the gufa karka, the principle is you are koneh, the principle of the property. It's nekneh to you, the compare principle of the property. What is not? What is waiting until I die? Lachamita. The kinyan is not complete until after I die. What's the completion of the kinyan? That you get the payrot. So basically what you've done is, you've said, if you say mayom lachamita, means the gufa karka, the property itself belongs to the individual you've gifted to it from today. Now as far as output from that property, and the value of that property, The peirot, the output of that property, belonged to the gifter, right, the bequeather of that property, until he dies. When he dies, then the peirot will revert to the owner of the principal of the property at this time. So that means that the, for instance, the bequeather of the property could sell the peirot. He could go ahead and sell them, and the person who owns the gufa karka, who's getting this gift, could sell the gufa karka, but he can't sell the peirot. All he can sell is the trust that will come after the death. He can sell the property for the future. So you have over here equivalent of a shmatanat shchemira, which is that the completion of the sale only happens at the point of death. And that's what you're trying to simulate over here. The Rishbam points out that obviously the two are different. Why? Because a matanat shchemira can be revoked or reversed. A shchemira can either make, if he says, this is the gift to so-and-so, and then he changes his mind and gives it to someone else, that's fine. There's no kinyan over here, so he can change his mind as much as he wants. And also, if he gets up from his deathbed, right, the gift is revoked. That's not true by a gift of Mayom Lachar Mita. It's a full-fledged kinyan. It's a full-fledged kinyan that says that Hayom, you get the kinyan a goof, Lachar Mita, you get kinyan a peirot. True, you have to wait for him, the person to pass away, to get the kinyan a peirot, but he can't change that. He can't grant it to anyone else because your kinyan precedes anyone else's kinyan on the property.
When he's a shlivnera, he says on the exact same property.
He can't do that. Right, but he can't. A Shchimira can undermine another gift of his own gift of a Shchimira because there's no formal kinyan. So he can undermine it because he changed his mind. But he can't undermine something that already had. He sold something years ago. He can't go on his deathbed and say, I didn't mean to sell, it's now yours. He can't undermine a full-fledged kinyan. That's what we have over here.
In the case of this Matana that was like Shchimira,
right, it has to be a kinyan mayom lachar mita because it doesn't work. Shchemira only works as the Rabbanan instituted that a shchemira works through a tzava even without a kinyan. That's only true of a shchemira. Anybody else who wants to give something and make it really be a gift, you have to have a kinyan. You have to have a formal kinyan. Right, kinyan chalipin, kinyan some consideration, whatever it is that he used to function as the kinyan over here, there has to be a kinyan of sorts. So there, this case is similar but different. I mean, similar that it's functional, or the process by which it's completed is death. But on the other hand, it's different in the fact that one of them can be reversed by the Shchemira, one of them cannot be reversed by the individual, the gifter over here, where the Bari cannot reverse it. Right? The Tosas, Rabbeinu Tam, says you could create such a case that is exactly like a Shchemira, which says, if you say, Me'ayom, if you phrase it this way, Me'ayom, Im lo echzorbi ad achar mita. Right, you could simulate the Shchemira by just putting in that phrase, Im lo echzorbi, if I don't change my mind. Me'yom lachar mita, if I don't change my mind, this will be yours when I die. So now you basically simulated exactly what the Shchemira is if you make that statement inside of it. So that's Rabbeinu Tam points out that you could create or you could simulate the Shchemira, and it's not blanket like the Rashbam says that if you say Me'yom lachar mita, if you enter this extra phrase, Im lo echzorbi, you could simulate what the Shchemira has. Okay, now, Yotiv Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Bach Sadra de Bei Rav. He was sitting in the, the hallway or the gazebo, some sort of area of the Bei Rav. But Yotiv Bekamer Mishmei de Rav Yochanan. He said over the name of Yochanan, Shchemira Shamar. He says, Kitvu Utnu Mana de Ploni. Write down a document and grant it to Ploni, Umeit, and he dies. Ein Kotvin Venotinin. We do not grant it, we do not do what he instructed. Why? Shema Lomu Gamar Laknoto El Bishtar. When he says, Kitvu Vitznu, write this down and give it to him. There are two possibilities what he means. There's one possibility he means give it to him and write it down so what? So there's tokif to it. He's giving it so that he has more power here. It's evidence to the fact that it was gifted. In that case, he would be konek because that's a matanat shchemira. Right? Matanat shchemira. On the other hand, it could be kadvu b'tznu, write down the document and be maknehim this object like the shtar. The problem with that is now he dies. And the shtar was not written yet, or the shtar was not given to him yet. The shtar is not given to him, there's no such thing as a kinyan achar mita. So we don't know which it is. Since we don't know what it is, we do not grant the gift. Ein shtar achar mita. So amalu Rabbi Elazar, bizdaruba. Right? So he says, be careful about this. Meaning that you should listen to what Rabbi Yochanan says. The psak of Rabbi Yochanan is a good psak over here, and listen to him. Rav Shivzvi Amar, Rav Shivzvi says the case was like this. Amar Lazar Amra, the Amar Lahu, Rabbi Yochanan is Daruba. The Rabbi Lazar was the Bala Memra. Rabbi Lazar is the one who said, be choshesh and do not give the gift. And Rabbi Yochanan was the one who came and gave the stamp of approval and says, listen to what Rabbi Lazar says. So I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Kavate, the Rav Shizvi Mistabra. The Lashon of Rav Shizvi makes more sense. Why? Yomar Bishlom Rav Lazar Amra, Rav Lazar, the one who was the author of the statement, Itzrich Rav Yochanan Nasude Alei, to Rav Lazar. Then Rav Yochanan comes and gives a stamp of approval. Why? Because Rav Yochanan is Rav Lazar as Rebbe. So it makes sense that Rabbi Yochanan is coming and giving a stamp of approval. Eliyahu my Rabbi Yochanan, I'm Rav. You say that Rabbi Yochanan is the author of the Memra. It's the Rabbi Lozal Asude Alei, the Rabbi Yochanan Rabbe. Since when do you need the student to come along and give a stamp of approval to what his Rabbi said? Doesn't make sense. Rabbi Lozal is coming and say, yeah, listen to my Rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan. Right? That doesn't, what does he need that for? Ba'od. Tashma, the Rabbi Lazar Amra. I can show you that Rabbi Lazar said it. The Sholach Rabin Mishmei the Rabbi Abo. He says, Rabin said the name of Rabbi Abo. Abu Yudin Shesholach Rabbi Lazar the Gola. Rabbi Lazar sent this to the Gola. Mishum Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu being Rav. Shchid Mei Rashi Mar Kedvu Tnu Maneh Leploni Umeit Ein Kodvim Benotim. Shema Lo Gomar Lakloi Lo Bishtar. Vein Shtar Lachar Mita. So this is the exact statement that we want to hear. And this is from Rabbi Lazar. It's quoting the name of Rabbi Lazar. So it makes sense that Rav Shizvi's story or retelling of the events is the proper one because it makes sense that Rabbi Lazar is the author and that Rabbi Yochanan is the giving the stamp of approval. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Tivadik or Tivdok. What does that mean? Check it out. What do you mean check it out? So Rabbi Yochanan is agreeing with Rabbi Lazar. It's the same statement we saw before that Rabbi Yochanan said, yes, Rabbi Lazar is right. So what does it mean Tivdok or Tivadik? The instance, my Tivadik, my Tivdok. What does it mean that you should check into it? So we have a statement here from Rav Dimi. Now, one, the first statement has nothing to do with our case here, which is that a daidiki can override a daidiki. As opposed to shtarot by a gifts and by sales, where the earlier dated shtar is more important, by a daidiki, by instructions of shchimra, the later dated document, that's like the last will and testament, right? The will, which has the latest date on it, is the most accurate will, because he's allowed to change his mind. So you have multiple wills, and the last will, the last dated will, is the one that's going to govern over here, because a Shchimera is allowed to change his mind and write new wills or new daidikis. Shchimera shamar kidvut nu maneh leploni umeit. So this is what our case is, what we're looking for. Shchimera who says, write and give such and such to a, or this money to Ploni, and then dies. Roim, im kimi afet kocho kodvim. If the whole point of giving him the shtar was to strengthen his position here, to show you that the gift was a real gift, and it's not, nobody can take it away from him, then you write it for him, because then the kinyan was done derech shchimira, and the document's simply evidence. V'im lav, but on the other hand, if we don't know, or we think that the document's written to create the kinyan, in kotvin, because there's no such thing as a kinyan, lachar mita. Can't have a shtar, lachar mita. Oh, so meiti, Rabbi Abraham Malal, Borish, Amar, Kidvut, Numan, Eloponi, mate, a healthy person, right now, a shchimira, who says, look, go ahead and write this down and give it to such and such. Then he says, "Umayn elaponi umeit ein kodvim v'notim." We don't do that. Ha? What can you infer from this? Shchimira kodvim v'notim. For a shchimira, you can't do this. Ha'u motiv la v'umavarikli. He asks the question and he answers it. B'miyapet kochom. That is a case where he's strengthening the position. So now Gemara asks you a question. Tzvi, heichidami miyapet kochom. How do you know? How do you know when he says kitvut no? Write it and give it to him, that the document can function in one of two ways. It can be function as a shtar raya. Shtar raya is fine. Then you can give it. Why? By a shchimira. Because we have the Chachamim instituted a shchimira without a kinyan give it tzavah, and it works. And if the shtar is just a shtar raya, that's no problem. You can write that after his death. That's not a creating a kinyan. That's not creating the change of ownership. On the other hand, if the kidvut nu is a shtar kinyan, the shtar itself is what generates the kinyan, then you can't do it, because you're writing it after he's dead, and you can't create a kinyan after he's dead. So how do you know what's miyapet kocho? Kid amar of chista, v'kinyona minei mosif al matan tado. That when he writes in the document, when the document, he says, write in the document, kinyona minei, right, that he took it from me, mosif al matan tado, is an addition to this gift. I mean that the documentation here is simply adding to, right, the matono, the gift that already existed. So achanami, so too over the case over here is amar ketuvu v'chatumu v'havule. So over here he says, write it v'chatumu v'havule and give it to him. Write it, seal it, and give it to him. But the writing over here is a case where he's saying to them what to do. What type of writing over here? He's saying, give it or grant it to him as a matono shchemira, and then give him a shtar raya, meaning that kinyon aminim osifo matan tado, that this kinyon is in addition, this shtar is in addition to the gift that I've already given. I mean, the gift is given, and the shtar here is simply to strengthen his position in the fact that he now has evidence to the fact that I gifted it to him.
It has this statement, Af ktova v'chotomo v'habole. V'habole is the gift itself and not the shtar.
Right. Af ktova v'chotomo. Also.
V'habole. What's v'habole?
And then it'll be for him. Yeah, and be for them. V'habole and give him the shtar. Af ktova v'chotomo v'habole. Right, that you should either the habole is the gift or the habole is that he give him the shtar.
If it's the shtar, then how do we know that his intention was the shtar?
No, because he said tnu. He said tnu leploni, give it to someone. Af ktova v'chotomo v'habole. Also, right, seal and write it in habole, which I think. So I think the habole is probably on the shtar. Could be that the habole is also the gift, but it would make more sense. The af here is the word that's helping him, which means that even or also. Right for him. The fact that it also indicates that the kinyan is not being generated through the shtar. It also means that the shtar is a shtar raya. Just like we saw before by the statement of Chista, when you say, right, kinyan amine mosif, addition to matna da over this gift, right, that's the case here. So Amr Itmar, Amr Yud, Amr Shmuel, Alachot Kotvim Vinotim, Alachot Shmuel says it like that, Bechen Amar Rabba, Amr Rav Nachman, Alachot Kotvim Vinotim. And again, under these conditions, under the kinyan, and under these conditions, where, he says to the individuals that are writing it for him, this is an addition, af, or also. So in those cases, we say that the shtar is simply a shtar rayu, and the kinyan works, and you give it to him. On the other hand, if he doesn't make such a statement, he says, kidvu tnu, that write it and give it. In that case, we say that we don't know. And since the shtar could be a shtar kinyan, and kinyan won't work, it's a safek, and a mosi mechaver, a lavaraya. You're going to have to bring proof that it really you're entitled to such a property. Okay, we'll stop over here.